B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
Jacoby Shaddix from Papa Roach is my guest today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast as they get ready to tour in 2020 with the guys from Five Finger Death Punch, I Prevail, and Ice Nine Kills. We talked about a lot of stuff, including those rock cruises. He says he gets real busy on them.
I get busy on right. that thing, you know what I mean? Me and my wife get busy. Oh, yeah.
We talk about an artist that he would love to collaborate with, as well as working on new music. He really opened up about the writing process and what he might be writing about.
You know, something's been floating around my mind a lot lately, and I feel like I censor myself a lot about what I talk about and what I believe and how I feel for fear of offending people.
And you might have noticed I didn't put the vintage damage plan on the description of the show. That's an Easter egg for just you guys who have decided to download this podcast today. With the 15th anniversary of Dimebag Darrell's passing just a few weeks back, I unearthed this interview I did with the guys back in January of 2004. It's a really fun listen.
And I grew up on Edward Van Halen, so I gotta go that way, you know? I know some Hendrix and stuff, but I mean, I can tell you almost everything about Edward.
Oh, we talk about a lot of stuff. That's coming up here in just a bit on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
As always, thanks so much for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. As you heard in the intro, man, lots of stuff to get to today with Jacoby Shaddix, of course, from P. Roach. And then I'm going to replay an interview I did 15 years ago with the guys from Damage Plan coming up here in just a bit as well. And of course, Al Beck is next to me. We're going to talk about, there's one rock band that made the top 10
most Google artist list. Yeah.
One rock band. Yeah, so see if you can guess which one that is. I guess there might be some new stuff coming out with Chester Bennington at the helm. We'll tell you about
but
that.
Not through Linkin Park.
That's right. We got some Green Day news. There's a band making a docu-series out there. And also Alice Cooper, and he talks about Lemmy from Motorhead and what might have happened had Lemmy,
if he was still around and maybe a project he may have joined them on.
Yeah, so we'll get into that here coming up in just a bit. What do you got going on? Anything good? Getting ready for the holidays?
I'm getting ready for the holidays. I'm looking for a break, man.
Yeah. Well, this is your break.
It is, yeah. Well, I'm phoning this thing in, that's for goddamn sure.
Well, why should this one be any different than any other
exactly.
one?
Exactly.
So, yeah, Jacoby Shaddix is our guest today. And I'll tell you what, I love talking to Jacoby. If you get a chance, go back and listen to the interview I did with him back during the summertime. That was actually live. And, no time constraints. I don't know. I think we talked to him about 15, 20 minutes, something like that. Jacoby's awesome. He's coming up on 8 years sober, which we talked about at the beginning of the year. He's coming up on 7 years at the beginning of 2019. And what a front man. I have to be honest. This guy has so much energy. And one time I brought up to him, in an interview I did with him, I don't know, a couple years back, I'm like, do you think that your sobriety just adds to, like, the level of the intensity of your stage performance? And he's like, absolutely, there's no question about it. And he is such a great front man and such a good guy. And so I was really excited to talk to him again to get ready to wrap up 2019. Hey, a little bit of housekeeping right here before we get into Jacoby Shaddix.
Sure.
I got some stuff coming up as far as interviews. I know I'll be talking with at least one guy next week, maybe a couple. We'll see what happens. I got a couple hooks in the water, as they say. And we'll get into that coming up here in just a bit. Hey, give your socials, by the way.
Al Beck Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right, at Meltdown WRIF. You can leave a voicemail for us as well, 248-586-2988. And without further ado, let's get into Jacoby Shaddix today on the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast.
Yo, what's up, man?
How you doing, brother?
Good. How you been?
I'm doing okay. Good to hear from you. Got this big tour, of course, for 2020, Five Finger with you guys and I Prevail and Ice Nine Kills. I mean, it's got to feel good to have your whole year planned out for you, at least a big chunk of it already, huh?
Yeah, man. It's 2020 is going to be a great year for us. I'm super stoked about that run with our bros at Five Finger. It's gonna be slamming.
Now,
P. Roach brings an A game. So.
There's no question about that.
No.
Last time I talked to you right here in Detroit, you wouldn't really let the cat out of the bag, and you probably won't now either. But I mean, as far as the 20th anniversary of Infest, you've probably heard this question a billion times. But you said you had some special things planned. Can you release anything or no?
As far as I release, we're gonna do a few special you know, performances of the album in its entirety. But exactly where those shows are going to pop up, that's the surprise.
I got you. Okay, cool. When I found out I was going to be talking to you, I had to hit up my friend Eric from I Prevail, and he says, tell them we're stoked to be on tour with them, and that if they want their butts kicked again in Family Feud, that they're ready for round two. So.
Oh, yeah, I hit on Shiprock. They kicked our ass, man. They were like, it was funny.
Yeah, so he said something about you guys had to, like, walk across and put gold medals in between your ass cheeks or something and waddle and drop it into a cup or something.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. They were like, yeah, hold this gold coin with your ass cheeks and then try to drop it in a cup, you know? So, hey, man, you know, I don't get a lot of practice at that, so.
Yeah, how do you like those rock and roll cruises?
Oh, dude, it's every time I go, it's a hoot, man. We always bring some friends of ours with us. And so my wife isn't, like, completely bored the whole time just because I get busy on right. that thing, you know what I mean? Me and my wife get busy. Oh, yeah. but we bring some friends with us, too, man, and we always have a good time. And we usually end up hanging out with my boy Clint from Seven Dust. Because they do those cruises. They've done a bunch of those cruises, and so it's a great time, man.
Yeah, and plus, how close are you to the... I've never been on one of these cruises, but how close do you hang out with the fans and stuff?
Oh, you're hanging with the fans, bro.
Yeah.
You can't go nowhere without kicking it with the fans, so it's like, that's part of the experience, though, you know what I mean?
Right.
And for me, it was good until probably, like, you know, once everybody starts getting, like, real good and hammered... And people start telling you the same story three times in a row, I'm like, I just pull the Irish exit.
Yeah, the Irish exit. I've been there, done that many a times. Yeah, and I was thinking about that since you're sober and stuff. And, you know, Kid Rock one time told me he doesn't really go to the after parties here in Detroit because everyone's been drinking all night. And he's the sober guy in the room, and it makes him feel weird. So I guess that's why you pull the Irish exit.
I mean, it's not necessarily about feeling weird. It's just, you know, you can only hear the same story so many times before you're like... I'm out. You know what I mean?
I hear you, man. There's no question about it. So, hey, last time I talked to you, we shut the microphones off and you said something. I'm like, wait a second. Why didn't we talk about this when the microphones were on? Of course, being here in Detroit and stuff, you mentioned how you'd always wanted to do something with Eminem. Do you remember that conversation?
Dude, I mean, if somebody out there listening, holler at him. I'd love, dude, that's like one. We actually, the band just did some writing sessions. And there's one track in particular we got flying around right now that it just seems like the perfect one. So I'm gonna have to hit them up, man. I'm gonna have to find a way to get a hold of that camp and see if we can get him out of hiding. Come on.
Yeah, have you ever...
We did anger management tour together a couple times, dude, so we got some history.
That's right. That was with Limp Bizkit and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, have you ever met Eminem? Because, I mean, he's kind of an elusive guy, and he's a little bit socially awkward. Have you ever had a chance to hang out with him?
Oh, yeah, man. We did Anger Management Tour twice. So we did one, like, in, I think it was, like, 2001, and then one in 2003.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we've done two tours with him, and we had a good time out there. We did a little partying, you know, but that was kind of par for the course back in the day.
Yeah. When was the last time you talked to him?
I saw him at the Epic Center in Los Angeles. We played. It was us, Kiss, and Eminem. Probably had to be like eight years ago now. Yeah. It's been a minute.
No, that would be an awesome collaboration between you guys. So we'll have to see if we can get the word out there for you on that. Hey, you talk about writing stuff and that. So are you guys working on some new stuff after the last record or what?
Yeah, the guys, the band have been making tons of riff ideas, song ideas, full-fledged songs, and so now I got my hands full of music and jamming to that new stuff, and it feels really good, man. It feels exciting. It's always exciting to hear, like, what's coming next, and kind of, like, being able to sit on that music myself personally and know that, like, I'm probably one of six people in the world that has this creation right now. It's just something so special about those moments for me when it's just the beginnings of the process, and it's I'm just waiting to hear what the music tells me.
And then, it's got to be mutually exciting when you can release it and let everybody else hear it then, right?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. It's like having a kid, man. Releasing it out into the world. Here you go, little one. Good luck.
So how far along are you guys? I mean, you said you got some riffs, and do you have a couple full songs kind of demoed out or whatever?
There's five full, like, you know, verse chorus song deals, you know what I'm saying? So, like, not necessarily like full fledged song. When I say a full fledged song, it's like, you know, they got the verse and the chorus and the bridge worked out, you know, and then I just go in and I got to put my, you know, put my ideas on it and see if I can really take it to that next level. And if I do that, then it's, we go in and dig through the song again and work out just the little kinks and the transitions and the drum fills and, you know, all that type of stuff.
Now, what kind of, do you have any lyrical content that you're working on without, you know, being that specific, but is there stuff in your mind that you're, that you want to get out there?
You know, something's been floating around my mind a lot lately, and I feel like I censor myself a lot about what I talk about and what I believe and how I feel, for fear of offending people. And I'm tired of that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, not that I just want to be some crass, rude individual, but it's like, you know, do I have to pander, you know, to a certain belief or idea? You know what I mean? And so I have this internal conflict all the time, personally, because I really like to give people a chance and listen to people's opinions and ideas, and I think that's really important. You know, but I also want people to listen to my opinions and my ideas. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. And do you think that maybe because of all the success and all the albums that you guys have put out, that maybe now is the perfect time, or at least a time available to you that you can maybe do that and tell people what you're thinking?
Well, you know, I'm not going to be able to make music forever. So at some point, you know, every record, I throw down everything I have inside myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have this internal conflict as I'm getting older. I feel with my relationship with the world and the knowledge that I have and the things I've learned. And, you know, not to say that I'm some wise cat, you know, because I got my struggles. But it's like some things I just don't want to have things left unsaid and stones left unturned. So I got to be thorough, you know what I mean? And that's going to make for some exciting music.
That's awesome, yeah.
Because the internal conflict, I feel, is where that's where music for me is born, you know, and trying to learn from certain situations or scenarios or predicaments that I've found myself in, or, you know, so it's always self-reflection. And, you know, I got to be careful too when I'm making records, because I can kind of make myself a little crazy sometimes when I spend a lot of time in my head. And that's, you know, I think people can relate, you know, when you kind of get stuck and you're just in your mind all the time, it's like you could be telling yourself a lot of fiction too. So creative process is an exciting one, man.
Well, I'll tell you what, two final things here for you, and then I'll cut you loose. I know you got other interviews. So is one of the things that, you know, you talk about your internal conflict and you're getting the stuff out, is part of it to get it out because you have kids and a family, and part of it to get it out in front of your fans?
Part of it is, I mean, let's just be real. What it is, it's my purpose. That's what it is, 100%. It's my purpose. Making this music and connecting with people through this music is my purpose. And so living this purpose is, you know, that's why I'm here, man. That's why I'm doing this.
And a final thing here for you, Jacoby, and we'll cut you loose, and we appreciate the time. How's your 49ers going to do this year in the playoffs?
Oh, dude, we're kicking ass so far. We're looking really good, man. It's very exciting to be a 49ers fan right now. And you've got a lot of really good players, and it's good business for us right now. We'll see. You know what I mean?
Hey, yeah, that's how they play the games. Yeah.
we've had, you know, our losses that we're not getting blown out and beat down. You know, it's coming down to the wire on our losses. So I think we'll be all right. We're going to kill it.
Well, as a guy who watches the Lions, unfortunately, every single Sunday, I'm pulling for you guys. We'll see what happens.
Oh, right on, man. Yeah, it's tough, dude. Being a Lions fan has been tough. I mean, don't get me wrong. We've had our fair share of years of, you know, sucking the gas pipe, you know, and having rough runs. So I get it.
I hear you there.
Yeah.
Well, Jacoby, thanks so much for the time. We'll see you in 2020 here in May in Detroit at the LCA with Five Finger Death Punch, I Prevail, and Ice Nine Kills. Have a great Christmas and New Year's, my friend.
Meltdown, it's always good catching up with you, man. I look forward to seeing you.
And there he is, Jacoby Shaddix, today on the Talkin' Rockin' Meltdown podcast. You know, he started talking about recording the brand new record and talking about new material and stuff, and I wasn't sure if he wanted to let the cat out of the bag as far as what he was talking about. He was still a little bit vague, but he gave me a little bit more than I thought, so that's pretty cool. So, looking forward to seeing those guys on tour with Five Finger Death Punch, I Prevail, and Ice Nine Kills as well, as they'll be hitting it up in the early 2020. So, hey, Al Beck is back. We're going to do this interview coming up in a few minutes that I kind of unearthed and I found, and it's with Damage Plan. An interview took place in January of 2004. Then, of course, 11 months later, Dimebag would be shot on stage and killed. So this is a really cool interview, and it's like it was just the 15th anniversary of his passing, right? And so it's like I thought I would pull this out and let people listen to it because Dime is just so Dime, and it's like in VP, it's like those guys just kind of like they're, you could tell they're like connected at the hip just by listening to this interview. And there's some funny things, which I'll get into in just a few minutes about the interview. But first, Al Beck is back, unfortunately. And now we got the rock news now. So what's going on with you, Al?
Oh, not much.
I almost forgot to turn your microphone on, which would have been good, actually.
I thought it was deliberate, actually. I was sitting there looking at the board going, can I leave?
So you haven't heard that interview with Damage Plan. This is before you came here.
Yeah, it was before, yeah. Like, I'm about to come up on 14 years, so it was shortly before my time here.
So the boss says to me, he goes, hey, there's this banner coming through Damage Plan. Like, no one really knew who they were. And then we found out, like, not very long before they got here, that it was the Abbott Brothers,
yeah,
and then Bob Zilla and Patrick, the singer. So it's like it was like we didn't really know what was going on with this. And when they came in, I can remember being pretty excited because I had, you know, I had actually met them a couple times and whatnot, just real brief. And actually had dinner with them one time in 1993, and I was slightly intimidated.
Yeah, I'll
cause,
bet.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, at that time they were still younger, and it's like you know, I can't even really describe it. I was really young in my career, and, you know, meeting, you know, big time rock stars like Pantera and stuff, you know, mm-hmm. and sitting down and having dinner with them. And I just remember, like, Phil and Rex not being the easiest to talk to, you know, because they're all pissed off at everything all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, so and I didn't really know too much about the other guys at the time. So this was early on in their career. But it was cool. And I just happened to be looking through this desktop thing here at work, and I saw this interview, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to throw this back up on the web because cool. It's just so cool, some of the stories, which I'll tell you about coming up here.
You can never get too much Dimebag, man.
I fell down
a YouTube rabbit hole just watching him play guitar just, I don't know, like 2 weeks ago.
Does it make you feel bad?
Oh, absolutely it does.
No, because you'll never play like
I'll
that.
I'll never play like that. And I do play, and there's no way. There's no way. I have no idea how he did it.
I've always thought about that, too. It's like, man, I want to play guitar like Dime or like Ted Nugent or whatever.
Well, I was watching him, one of those videos I fell on the rabbit hole, he was doing like a guitar clinic.
Yeah.
And he jammed a little bit, and he, you know, watched him hit the whammy bar. And I was like, oh, like that's how you do it. And I went home and I started doing it. And it sounded nothing like it at all.
Yeah. You know, for Record Store Day a couple years ago, there was this five-track Dime Vision thing that came out. And I remember I got a hold of one from some of my connections. And I paid like, I don't know, it was like $20 or something, whatever it was. But there's some killer songs on it. There's only five songs on it. I think two or three of the songs are just killer, right? Mm-hmm. And I texted a picture of it to Vinny, his brother. And I'm like, hey, man, VP, I got this, man. And VP was a big one on the emojis. I've talked about this before. And he sent me back like all these like black hearts and prayer hands and stuff like that. So
yeah.
It was cool. So, hey, anyways, let's get to the rock news here before getting that interview coming up here in just a few minutes. But, you know, you got to give it to Motley Crue. They said they weren't going to tour, and now they're back and they're going to be touring 2020. All the dates are set. And apparently these guys are making waves not only, you know, everywhere, but also on the interwebs.
On the interwebs. You know, we're kind of at the end of the year. We start start going through the, you know, the top lists of 2019, and they did make the top 10 most Googled artists of the year, which is not a surprise. Like you said, they're going back out on tour. Also, don't forget about The Dirt.
Yeah.
So with The Dirt coming out, so I mean, I'm sure there's some younger fans that were kind of looking at who they were. Unfortunately, I think they're the only rock band on the top 10 list. It's the we're looking at Tekiashi 69 on the list, Gladys Knight, Motley Crue's in there at number 6, actually, Lil Nas X,
really,
Billie Eilish. The top three are Billie Eilish, 21 Savage, and the number one, probably not for a good reason, is R. Kelly.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah, he was the number one.
Well, Motley, you know, the Dirt came out in March, and so people who were a little bit younger might be like, what is with this band?
Yeah.
You know, and checking them out. So
yeah, Queen had a little bit of a resurgence, too, and opened up to younger fans as well.
And so that was after you saw the movie.
Yes.
Finally.
Yeah, finally, yeah. Like 2 days ago.
Yeah. Seems like it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, switching gears to Chester Bennington. What was the name of his original band?
Grey Days.
Grey Days. Okay. Yeah. Now, they're supposed to be putting out some stuff with him on vocals.
Yeah. So, here's the thing. I guess before Chester had passed away, he was actually working with Grey Days, and they were going to go back. They had done, I think, two albums together with Chester, and they were kind of going through, not redoing entire albums, but kind of select songs, and they were redoing them. Well, I guess according to Chester's widow, Talinda, they're going to go ahead and release some of that and finish up what they had started together, and which is, you know, a little odd, but here's what I think is kind of cool. It does look like they're actually going to be commissioning Chester's son, Jamie, to lay down some vocals as well. So this is no release date as of yet, but it does look like we're going to get to some like re-recorded Grey Days stuff with Chester and Chester's son.
Yeah, we'll see what it sounds like, because I have no clue. I mean, will it sound like Linkin Park? I don't know.
You know. No idea.
So, all right. Green Day's got something going on as far as, some video games or something?
Some video games, you know, we're seeing more and more of this crossover with rock. I think even Green Day has been one of the bands that's done in-game performances on, you know, Fortnite or whatever else. But now they had just recently played a big gamer award show and had this big announcement that they were going to be, announcing. Mm-hmm. And it turns out they're going to be having a song pack for this game, Beat Saber, which is a VR game. And it's kind of, I don't know.
What does VR mean?
Virtual reality.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, with the headset and the whole thing.
I thought that would... What's the difference between that and, like, first person? Or is that totally different?
Well, VR, I have a VR headset for my PlayStation, but
of course
it kind of immerses you in
have
the
you
experience.
Have you ever kissed a girl?
I have, yes, thank you. In between episodes of Star Trek,
I
even.
I guess, yeah.
My nephew is into this Beat Saber game. It's a similar concept to like a Guitar Hero,
okay,
where you've got corresponding colors and
is
buttons.
Is it Beat Saber or Beat Saber?
Saber, like a lightsaber.
Oh.
So you almost have like a lightsaber from Star Wars, then you kind of hit things that go along with music and...
This sounds like the geekiest thing ever.
It's pretty geeky, but Green Day's got a song pack available for that now, and also confirmed for the New Year's Rockin' Eve. They're going
to
be...
Hey, what are you doing? I'm going home to play Beat Saber. All right. Those are words you'll never hear me utter, by the way. Hey, Meltdown, what's going on tonight?
Well, it's a good thing they live forever on the podcast now.
That's right. So, also switching gears to Korn. You know, what's funny is, like, you and I kind of do a docu-series, so to speak. It's called Meltdown's Meltdown, and you were just on it.
Yes.
Talking about Star Trek and Star Wars and Battlestar Galactica.
I don't know what's documented on it, but
right.
It's a series.
Yeah, there is a series. Yeah, you can check out if you want on the website, WRIF.com. But anyways, yeah, so you were on there the other day straightening my tie out about, you know, ridiculous space movies.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so Korn has a somewhat of a different docu-series.
That's right. So it's actually...
it's probably a little more polished, and you probably put a little more time into it than we do.
Probably. We did four takes, and if you do go watch the video, you got to check out the blooper reel at the end.
Yeah.
We actually had some fun yesterday. So they've got a docu-series that's up on YouTube, of course. We've seen several bands do this, like Led Zeppelin did the History of Led Zeppelin for their 50th anniversary. Now, this first episode for the Korn docu-series kind of chronicles behind the scenes look at the band's latest stage setup from their latest tour in support of their 13th studio album, The Nothing. It also kind of takes a look at the album and some of the very heavy subject matter, which was influenced by, of course, the death of Jonathan Davis's estranged wife, Devin. So it's a real behind the scenes look. The first episode is up now. Really short, too, only about 6 minutes or so.
And finally here, let's wrap this thing up so we can get into this Damage Plan classic talk and rock interview with those guys. Alice Cooper has recently talked about what's his name, Lemmy.
Yeah.
And it's like he's mentioned all sorts of stuff. So what was he saying?
Well, here's the thing. It's sort of like a what if thing. You know, I'm a comic book fan, and every so often you get the what if Superman had landed in Russia? How would that story have been different?
I've never heard that, but okay.
Well, yeah. Well, there's a what if aspect. But this is sort of a what if Lemmy was still around. You know, Alice Cooper's part of that band, Hollywood Vampires, you know, Johnny Depp and all that stuff. He says if Lemmy was still around, he would definitely be one of the vampires. Says that he had played with or hung out with or toured with all the guys in the band. They all knew him on some different level. And so that Lemmy was just that sort of journeyman, and he guarantees he would have been playing bass in that band.
You know, it's too bad I didn't catch that before, because I could have asked Robert DeLeo about that last week when we had Stone Temple Pilots on the podcast earlier this week, I should say.
Yeah.
But yeah, because, you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but the reason Jeff Gutt is in Stone Temple Pilots is because when Hollywood Vampires came through Detroit, somebody that knows Jeff told Robert, you guys should take a look at Jeff Gutt.
Oh, no kidding.
So that's the connection, the 6 degrees of separation Hollywood Vampires to Jeff Gutt being in Stone Temple Pilots.
Yeah.
Well, so now see, if Lemmy was alive, Jeff might not have been in there.
He might not be in the band. That's entirely possible. Well, Cooper did give a little more insight into the kind of guy Lemmy was. He said that, you know, 37 years ago, Cooper had quit drinking, and he ran into Lemmy one time, and Lemmy said, hey, I quit drinking. And he said, oh, that's good for you. What's that? He said he had a drink in his hand. He said, what do you got there? Some Coca-Cola? He said, well, with a little whiskey in it. He said Lemmy's idea of quitting drinking was not drinking an entire bottle. He'd only have 5 or 6 drinks.
Yeah, I can imagine it. Hey, I quit drinking when? Last night, but I'll start back up again tonight, you know, or whatever. Yeah, that is hysterical.
Yeah,
I remember going to Los Angeles one time in 2004 for this. Ironically enough, Motley Crue was getting ready to go back out on tour and stuff, and I purposely went to the Rainbow just to see if Lemmy was there, and he wasn't there that time. It would have been tour or whatever. Maybe it was too early. Maybe I went, you know, maybe he doesn't get there at like, you know, 8 o'clock at night or something. Probably stays till close.
I was gonna say he was there 5 minutes before you and 5 minutes after. Probably.
That might be. Yeah. So, anyways, no, but Lemmy's one of those guys I wish I had a chance to meet. I did see him play live, you know, obviously a few times with Motorhead and whatnot. So, anyways, I was fortunate enough to have a chance to hang with the legendary Dimebag and Vinnie Paul with their band Damage Plan. And sometimes what happens when I do these interviews is I'll contact, like you just heard me talking with Jacoby from Papa Roach. I flew off, I sent off a message to Eric from My Prevail. Hey, you guys are going on tour with P. Roach. Give me something to talk about. He said that this Family Feud thing on the boat, on the cruise that we just talked about a few minutes ago. And so the same thing happened with this. And this is funny because this is 15 years ago, and I wasn't doing as many interviews as I do now. I mean, I do maybe a few a year. It wasn't very many at all. And so when these guys came in, I got 4 guys in the studio. And so you'll see like kind of the evolution of me. Not that that matters anything, but anyways,
you've evolved.
Well, maybe just a little bit. So then I called one of my friends down in Dallas, Texas, of course, where they're from. And I said, hey, listen, man, I've got Vinny and I got, you know, Dime coming in. Can you give me some info or whatever? He says, well, I really can't. But I'll tell you what, Cindy, our afternoon girl or whatever it was, I'll give you her number and let her, you know, give you some stuff. And so I called her up. And one of the things she said was, you know, ask him about this, ask him about that. And so you'll hear in this interview, at one point, they're like, where did you hear that? You know? And so, you'll get the picture. But anyways, I thought this was so great. Dime talking about all the guitar contests he won before he turned 16 in Dallas. They talked about the first song they played. You know, I just thought so much of this interview. And now, of course, looking back 15 years later, and Dime is gone, and VP's gone. And it's like, I just thought it'd be really cool for you guys to check it out. So I hope you guys enjoy this. It's a Damage Plan from January of 2004 right here on Talkin' Rock. If it rocks, it's on the Riff, 101 WRIF, Detroit's home of rock and roll. It's Meltdown here in the studio with the boys from Damage Plan. Welcome to Detroit, guys.
Yeah!
How you doing?
Thank
you.
City.
Tuck in there, Dimes. How you doing, man?
Doing damn good. How you doing?
I'm getting ready for this Damage Plan CD coming up February 10th. We'll talk about that here, of course, a lot. Vinny, how you doing?
Excellent, excellent.
Patrick, how are you, man?
Fantastic.
And Bob Zilla, what's happening, bro?
Hello.
Now, they gave you that name, huh?
They dubbed me.
The boys in the band gave you
Knighted
Bob Zilla.
Knighted me Zilla.
That's all right, I guess.
I'm on the crown.
Now, you're. Let me get this straight here. You're a tattoo artist?
Yeah.
And you've done some of their stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. How much of their stuff have you done?
Not enough.
Yeah. It's kind of hard to add up, man. Sometimes you don't even know how many tattoos you got until you start counting.
I marked actually each one of them with something.
Is that right?
Then he's got the tribal.
Where's your tribal, man?
I call it my dancer tattoo. Right?
Oh, okay, right.
He's being modest.
Really? Is that right?
That's cool, man.
Cool, man. Well, listen, welcome to Detroit. You guys are doing this tour to promote the new record, Newfound Power, coming out February 10th. Talk about the new record there, Dimes.
Well, it's exactly what it's titled. You know, it's our newfound power, man. You know, after things went down in flames with the Pantera thing, you know, we had to reach deep inside and find some guts, find some balls in the newfound power. And that's where it started coming from, you know. It's sick, sludgy, heavy. Chunky, it's a wide variety of things, you know. It's not just one flavor.
Okay, well, let's talk about the Pantera thing, because I've been reading this on the internet for months now, and you guys have been going back and forth on the internet, and especially in magazines, I guess. A lot of these internet websites have been printing out magazine interviews. So what happened with Pantera?
Go ahead,
Rick. Who wants to take that one out?
It ain't that big deal.
Dude, really, it's pretty simple, man. There's a lot of things that went down that shouldn't have went down. It was pretty uncool the way it all happened. And basically what it boils down to is that Phil didn't want to do it anymore. And he didn't bother telling anybody. He had another agenda. You know, these other bands that he wanted to be a part of, his drug thing that he wanted to do, all that stuff. And we spent about a year trying to make some kind of communication with the guy through conference calls, you know, meetings, stuff like that we had scheduled to try to get to the bottom of it, to find out what was going on. Because he's quit the band from every stage in America at the time, but he didn't bother telling anybody that was in the band.
Mm-hmm.
So after about a year of this, me and Dime looked at each other and just said, you know what, this is bullshit. It's time to move on. We got to do something different. And that's when we started making the new music. And ironically enough, Super Bowl Sunday 2 years ago is when we made that decision. And I got my tattoo from Bob that day. And Dime actually talked to Pat on the phone, and Pat said, be sure and put your money on New England that day. So... ironically, it all panned out. We were all in touch on that day, and we didn't even know our destiny was yet to come.
Right,
you know?
On.
Now, yeah, it says here you guys were conceived January 2003, but I guess it would have been 2002, huh?
Yeah.
Now, this whole Phil thing is kind of befuddling, because it's like you guys say that, you know, you just want to get back and do the whole Pantera thing again, and then he just said no, he didn't return any calls. And
I haven't heard from that dude since the 911 when we flew over to Dublin, Ireland, to start the, we're doing a tour with Slayer, Biohazard, a couple other bands, some arenas, or some big outdoor festival stuff, and that thing got blown out, and we sat in a hotel room for 7 solid days, and we finally got flights out of there and flew home, and next thing I know, it's down, down's God, next thing I know, no, down's out of there, Pantera sucks, now it's Superjoint's the king of the United States of the world, and then that, you know, up Pantera's, up Dimebag's, up Vinny's, and it's like, okay, now where's this coming from, what was so damn bad, what took it to this level, and we, like Vinny said, man, we made conference calls, we had meetings, we even tried to throw a meeting in New York, you know, with the record label, with the actual head of the record company, and no dice, man. He didn't want nothing to do with it, and there you have it, you know. And I just want to set the record straight once for all the Pantera fans, Dom and Vinny fans. Me and Vinny did plan on doing the Pantera thing, you know, 110% for life, you know. If you put everything you got into something, you ain't got no time for no side projects and jack-off stuff like that. Mm. You know, it's all about one, and that's it, and that's your baby. That's how me and Vinny approached it. And for the record, me and Vinny would never, ever go out there and start up an army like we had that followed Pantera and took up for us, that would kill for us, and then up and leave them just hanging for no good reason. And that's the uncool part about it. And we're in the same boat as they are. But, hey, man, since then, we got the newfound power in us. We got the Damage Plan out here now. We got two new dudes that are bad motherfuckers, totally killer from every perspective. Got the Brotherhood back. They live right across the street from me. They live together. We can throw beers at each other's houses. That's how close we live. We do pretty much damn near everything together, talk to each other every day, and all have the same goals. No dope hang-ups, no hang-ups, and just ready to go out and kill, man.
So, in other words, Philip just... No reason. Just decided not to go into Pantera anymore. That's it.
No real reason at all.
All right. Damage Plan right here in the studio with us. February 10th is when A Newfound Power comes out. You know, because you read this stuff. Do you guys read it on the internet? Some of this, the back and forth stuff. Yeah. And some of the fans. Because I'm sure the fans, I'm thinking to myself, you know, the Pantera fans are the diehardest fans around.
Right.
And, you know, you just can't drop them like a, you know.
Yeah, you don't do that.
Basically what's going on is when people want to get the story and get the truth, they want that. But then, at the same time, it's not what they want to hear, so they say you're talking shit about somebody.
Mm-hmm.
You're not talking shit about anybody when you're telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to hear what we have to say about what went down, it's unanimously basically the same thing every time. Now, if you want to go towards...
an answer.
Yeah.
You know?
If you want to go towards what Phil's done over the past 2 years, he sent all kinds of mixed signals to everybody. You know, those guys to, oh, I love those guys, I miss them, you know what I mean? It just, I guess it depends on what he's on, what day, and, you know, whatever. But the bottom line is we're done with that. It was a beautiful past. We would do nothing to ever tarnish it, and we're ready to create a new legacy with the new band, Damage Plan, and that is our focus, man.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, thanks for talking about that, because we've had a lot of calls and a lot of speculation over the years. Let's talk about a Damage Plan here for Newfound Power, 14 tracks on this thing. A couple of guest appearances on it, too, eh, Dennis?
Hell yeah.
Who's on there?
Well, my brother Zach Wild was in town. We were doing a cover shoot for Guitar World. He got the MVP. I got the best metal guitar player, and they wanted to pair us up, which is always a damaging experience in itself. And after we blew through a big bottle of Crown Royal and did the interviews, and we were just kicking it, man. He had about 30 minutes left, and we were jamming the tracks. And I was like, man, are you digging? He's like, dude, this is sick, bro. I was like, man, you gotta throw a lead on it. He goes, let's go. And you know what? The studio's right behind my house. We literally walked down there, plugged his guitar up. I tuned it. I handed it to him. He sat down and he just started blowing beads on it, man. And it was like,
whew,
go Zach, man. And of course, he went to the airport. We got him there on time, and he goes to the bar trying to get that last-minute cocktail off before he jumps on the bird, misses the plane. They call me an hour later. Dom, I guess I'm stuck in town, bro. I said, all right, let's go do it. And so we hooked up, and then that's when the wheels started coming off of it. Anyway, he was still sticking around like 2 days later, and we were listening to Soul Bleed down in the studio, and he said, man, I can hear something in the background on that. I want to do some answers. Hook me up a mic. And so he's doing like the high kind of Cornell-ish sounding stuff on the answers on Soul Bleed. And that ain't all that we did while we were hanging, man. Like I said, plenty of damaging from all angles, but Corey Taylor's also on the record, and we've been friends with him from early in the Slipknot days, and he came through with Stone Sour. We were listening to the new stuff on the bus, and we were just talking about this and that and this and that, and doing double shots and all whatnot, and here we go again, man. Hey, dude, you want to jam on it? Or, dude, let me get a piece of it, however it went down. And I was like, all right. He goes, just send me something, man, and I'll throw down on it. And we thought the appropriate song was you for sure, you know. I call him up and I go, did you get it? And he goes, you had to send me the fuck you. And I said, goddamn right, tear it up. And we got it back like about a week later, and these guys already listened to it. I was like, man, what'd it turn out like? And they're like, man, it's brutal, come listen. And anyway, man, we think you did a hell of a job on it.
And now, is Jerry Cantrell on the record too?
That was later on in the mix, man. Okay. We actually had one track laying around. The Japanese people always like to get one extra one, you know. And so we were going to try to squeeze one off for him. We kind of started working on putting the track together and moving around, doing some stuff to it. And we got it that far, and the next thing we knew, it's Turkey Day, man. It's always something. You know how quick time's flying these days, man. And Jerry came down, and it hit me, man, that night, man. We'd been out bowling and just partying and whatnot. I was like, man, Jerry, man, you ought to sing the verses on this. This is total like old school Alice in a weird way. And I was like, man, just go ahead and let it rip on there. And he's like, I got an idea. And he started humming something to me. I said, hang on. I ran upstairs, grabbed the 4-track, plugged him up a 58, put it on cassette for him. And he said, all right, just turn me loose, lock the door, and put him in the room. And about an hour later, he comes out and he goes, man, here's the lyrics. Come on in. I want you to check it out. And that was that. I mean, and then that inspired Patrick to take it from there. Pat takes all the other parts, of course, and all the bridge stuff. Anyway, man, and just brothers hanging out with brothers, having a good time, and all in the same boat, same game, same love for music. And hey, anybody's welcome anytime. You know, it was none of it was planned. It was just like one of those off the hook kind of things. You know, we got time, let's jam.
And it will be released here in the States too. It's going to be part of the Punisher soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's going to be on there with some pretty good stuff, because I know that movie's going to be pretty hot.
Now, you said, you know how time flies. I was looking at it. I remember playing something on Vulgar Display for the first time back in 1992. That's amazing. That record's 14 years old now.
Isn't it? It is amazing.
Man, unbelievable. Here with the guys from Damage Plan, we got Dimebag Darrell, Vinnie Paul, Bob Zill on bass, and Patrick Lachman, is that right?
Lachman.
Now, you played a little bit with Rob Helford and did some stuff with Tommy Victor from Prong, too?
Yeah, a little bit. Did 3 records with Rob. Started back when he started making his return to metal in late 99, and we did the Resurrection album.
Awesome record, my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very good record.
And then we did a double
Is it the one where he's on the Harley, the Chrome Harley?
Yeah.
That's, yeah. That's pretty tight.
We did a double live record from the world tour that we did with Maiden and Queensryche, and then came back and did the follow-up in the studio, which was Crucible. So,
and so it's got to be a big honor to you to work with these two guys here, and Bob as well.
Definitely.
After, you know, I mean, Phil decides to get up and leave, and then they're looking for someone that just punishes, probably, huh?
Yeah.
Someone aggressive?
Yeah, someone aggressive, but can also get into some different areas that they were straying away from, maybe get out of that corner that they were painted into.
Is there stuff when you guys write songs that you go, well, I don't know if I want to go in that direction because our lead singer can't pull it off or whatever? Is there some stuff you do with that, Vinny?
Not with this band.
No.
Right. There's a, like I said, if you listen to the record from top to bottom, it's like Baskin Robbins, man. You get 31 flavors. There's a lot of color there. And the musicianship, the songwriting, and the vocal ability is, it's all there, man. And it's really cool to be able to be diverse and wide open once again.
Let's crank out a track here from Damage Plan. If it rocks, it's on the riff.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
It rocks, it's on the Riff 101 WRIF Damage Plan. Save me right there. The boys from the band are in the studio here with us. Dimes, Vinnie Paul, Bob, and Patrick. Talk about this party you had at your house, Vinnie, with John from Rob Zombie.
All right. You want me to bust him past the shops?
Let's do it, man.
Where did you hear about it, man?
I got sources everywhere.
Don't everybody.
Well, look, the bottom line was, it wasn't really much of a party. He was in town doing a drum club.
All right. I'm going to be totally honest here. I thought about this, and I'm like, man, I don't know John Tempesta. This story is, I mean, super classic and stuff, but I don't know, man. I don't want to bust the guy's chops so bad. So I'm going to take this part of the interview out. You can ask the Anthrax guys or ask whatever, but I thought, you know what? I'm going to leave the poor guy alone. So let's continue onward with Damage Plan, Vinnie Paul and Dimebag, Patrick and Bob Zilla.
Please don't tell anybody. If you tell those guys in Anthrax, I'll never hear the end of it.
What was he watching, though?
Oh, yeah, and this is the kicker. He was watching Happy Days. I thought he would have had a porno. I thought he would have had a porno flick in or something. He was watching Happy Days.
He's got a thing for Miss Cunningham or something.
Oh, man.
Well, that's the John Tempesta story. He's famous for that.
Oh, Chachi.
And every time I see him, he's like, man, you got to quit telling that story, man. And, you know, he dates all these supermodels and stuff out in L.A. and stuff. So it's always like really bust his chops with him.
Oh, man.
Hey, man, he's the wrong cat to be busting, actually, because he's a super nice cat.
He is,
but, you know, you got a lot of man up every now and then.
Every once in a while, I guess.
Gishipo.
Hey, speaking of Anthrax, you did some stuff on their latest Cadillac Rock Box.
Yeah.
Now, is that you on the beginning of it, too?
I didn't know it was going to be. I was just calling my boy up. You know, I was like, hey, man, some mighty fine grooves going on here. And the next thing I know, they send me the mixed copy, and it's me talking to them from my Cadillac Rock Box, and they named the song after that little message I left him.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites on that CD.
That's a great song.
That's funny because for the amount of, you know, the amount how you talk and tell your story stuff, that was only like 5 seconds in the beginning. Of that. You must have left a longer message
than
that.
Oh, you know, they had a snip, 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 nip, tuck, you know?
Damage Plan in the studio February 10th for a newfound power. Hey, Tom, I wanted to ask you real fast about this Rolling Stone Top 100 guitarist of all time. What'd you think?
Man, you know, I didn't even get a pull off of it, to be honest with you.
Is that right?
When did it come out?
It came out a few months ago, and Eddie Van Halen was 70th, so that should give you a clue as to what happened there.
Let's see.
There's a lot of key people that weren't even on there.
Yeah,
so
I think
not a whole lot of.
I think Joni Mitchell or someone was ahead of. Jerry Garcia was ahead of Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah, shouldn't have been a whole lot of credibility.
Well, you know, I had a cat ask me about that earlier. Said somebody was saying that they were trying to compare Edward Van Halen to Jimi Hendrix. You know, and who was better, Don? Which one do you think? And I was like, well, look, dude, you know, it just depends on when you grew up and what era you're from. And I grew up on Edward Van Halen, so I got to go that way. You know. Yeah. You know, I know some Hendrix and stuff, but I mean, I could tell you almost everything about Edward, how he wired his guitars up, painted them, everything. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, that was my boy that I grew up on. So if you're smoked and you're 60 years old, you probably grew up with Hendrix, man. You know, and you're going to go that way. But, you know, but guitar playing is one of them things, man, where really nobody's really no better than anybody. It's just for everybody to utilize and burn. However, you know, I wouldn't want to hear everybody try to play the same. You know, and see who can like master it. It's like a heartfelt kind of thing, and just it's impossible to compare guitar players. Although you got to have your favorites, right?
Right. Now, is it true that you won all the guitar contests in Dallas before you were 16?
This is totally true, man. Then they made me judge when I was about 16 years old or something like that. They're like, all right, dude, you done won the Dean, the Charvel, the Randall Stack, the Marshall Stack. I can't even remember what all I won, but there was some good prizes. And they're like, man, people feel like they're not getting a fair shot around here, man. You're going to have to be the judge. I was like, all right, I'll judge it. You know, and hey, in all those contests, I'd get up, I'd play Randy Rhoads, Mother Earth, you know, Van Halen, Eruption, you know, all the stuff I grew up on, you know, the Iommis, the Breaking and Some Kiss and stuff, just a little bit of all that stuff and a bunch of my own stuff. So there you go. It's what school you come from, you know?
Well, that's awesome. And of course, I guess, Vinny, growing up, you probably had to listen to him, and you guys jammed a lot, I guess, in the basements or something, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we jammed a whole lot, man. First song we ever did was Smoke on the Water, and it started off like...
Hey, thanks so much for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Not exactly sure what happened at the end of that interview. I don't know. It's been lost in the ether, I guess, forever. But, yeah, it was really cool when those guys started jamming out Smoke on the Water together. Man, really great stuff. I was super fortunate to have a chance to talk with Dime and VP as well and become friends with VP later on in life due to some really just crazy circumstances. But, anyways, hey, listen, we do appreciate you guys listening. If you get a chance, give it a 5-star review on iTunes and Apple and the whole thing. You can leave a voicemail for us as well, 248-586-2988. And as always, thank you for listening to Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' on You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.